Hadassah, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Becheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Demystifying Hilchos Nida, a podcast series with Mrs. Rivki Kaplan, in which we'll explore the historical background and underlying halachic principles behind the laws of Nida. Mrs. Kaplan is a shlucha, teacher, lecturer, and yoetzet halacha with over 20 years of experience teaching and mentoring women in the area of Taharas HaMishpacha. She will be building on her experience and expertise in Hilchos Nida to give us a deeper appreciation for the halachas that we practice every single day. Please keep in mind while listening that this series is intended for educational purposes only and should not replace seeking qualified rabbinic guidance for any application to practical halachic scenarios. Our goal for this series is to enhance your observance of Taharas HaMishpacha and to inspire you to observe the halachas in the most optimal way. Please note that each individual episode is only one part of a bigger picture, so we encourage you to listen to all the episodes in the series in order to get a complete understanding of the content we discuss here. This episode is sponsored by Mrs. Vivi Darin, in loving memory of Blima Bas Harav Yisrael HaKayim Darin, on the occasion of her 25th Yahrzeit, the 28th of Kislev, the fourth night of Hanukkah. May her neshama have an aliyah. Welcome back to our Hilchos Nida series with Mrs. Rivki Kaplan. In this episode, we're going to be looking at the very end of the purification process that the Nida goes through prior to immersing in a mikvah. We'll be defining the concept of chatzitza. Chatzitza means something that interferes between the woman's body and the water and disqualifies her immersion in the mikvah. And we'll be looking at some of the underlying principles that contribute to how we define what makes something a chatzitza. We'll be looking at how those principles apply both midaraisa and midarabanan and get a better understanding of how those principles apply to specific examples of things that may or may not be considered a chatzitza. We'll also be looking at the definitions of the concepts of chafifa and iyun, which are two stages in the process of removing chatzitzas prior to immersing in the mikvah. So let's dive in.
So yeah, good to be back. And we're definitely into the home stretch here. If the woman is in the stage where she's concerned about chatzitza, then most likely she is preparing for immersion at the conclusion of her purification process. And the source that we have regarding chatzitza, so chatzitza is like Hadassah had said, it's going to be not any kind, I'm going to explain what I mean by that, but something that's going to prevent the water from touching all parts of her body. And the body, of course, I mean her here and her entire, like from top to bottom. So the pasuk that we find actually in Parshat Metzora, in Chumash Vayikra, it says, I'm just going to read part of it. V'rachatz b'mayim et kol b'saro. And it's actually referring to, in regards to when a man needs to immerse regarding a particular impurification process, impurity that he is going through a purification process for. And it tells us that v'rachatz b'mayim et kol b'saro. He needs to immerse his entire body into the water. And then the Gemara understands from this pasuk that this is going to apply anytime when we are, from a Doraita perspective, immersing in the water. And the Gemara tells us on these words, Shelo yiyeh davar chotzetz ben besaro l'mayim. In order to ensure that every part of his body and head is coming into contact with the water, she needs to ensure that there is nothing, Shelo yiyeh davar chotzetz, there's nothing that is creating, right, this intervention between the water touching it. Then we go on to explain what exactly does this mean. So the Gemara tells us that from the Doraita perspective, it would be considered a chatzitza, it would be considered an intervening object if, okay, it covered rubo umakpid alav, then chotzetz. So if it covered a majority of her body, and umakpid, she was careful about it. Like, she didn't want it there. She was like, I don't want this thing here. I'm particular that I don't want this here. Then it would be considered a chatzitza. And that, of course, I emphasize, is from a d'oraita perspective. And if you've come this far in the series, you know that most ways in which we practice don't stop at the d'oraita. So what did the Rabbanim have to say about it? They said, okay, d'oraita has told us if it's on a majority of her body and she's particular that she does not want it there, then it's a chatzitza. But we learned from this that even if it is on a majority of her body and she doesn't care if it's there, okay? She doesn't care if it's there. But if it's on the majority of her body, then it already qualifies as a chatzitza. And more than that, if it's on a minority of her body and she does care about it, then that too qualifies as a chatzitza. So let's just summarize it. From a Torah perspective, it would have to be on the majority of her body, and she would have to be particular that she does not want it there. The sages then take that one step further, and they say, if it's on the majority of her body, even if she is not particular, it would qualify as a chatzitza, and it would invalidate her immersion. And if it's a minority of her body, but she does not want it there, then that too would qualify as a chatzitza, and it too would cause a problem with an immersion. And then the sages add in the Gemara, but we're going to see that the Shulchan Aruch is going to take this one step further, and they say, regarding something that is a minority and she doesn't care if it's there, that would not be considered a chatzitza. But again, I want to add that that is just from the Gemara, and yet we're going to see that in the later stages of the rulings in Halacha, we see that a different ruling is applied. Okay, so let's talk about this. So first of all, let's talk about majority. So what is the question is, how do we define majority? Do we define our body as one entity and then our here as a separate entity? Or do we define our entire being as just a totality of one entity? Okay. What would be like a practical ramification of these two different rulings? If I'm saying that I'm including everything as one entity, then even if my entire hair on my head was a huge mess of dreadlocks, and I might even have some dirt in there, and I might even have who knows what else tangled in there, but if I'm counting it as an entire entity, then my head of hair would still count as a minority, okay? However, in the ruling, which is the more accepted, and that's the one that the Shulchan Aruch goes by, that is, no. The body is one entity, and the hair on the head is a different entity. So when you talk about majority, okay, it would have to be the majority of either your body or the majority of your hair separately taken into consideration. So if somebody would find themselves in a situation where their hair would have dreadlocks, like a large portion of their hair would be completely knotted or very messy or have like some dirt in it, that would be very problematic because that is how we rule. That when the Gemara says a majority, we count the hair separately and we count the body separately. So if you have a majority on your body or you have a majority on your hair, either one is going to create a problem. Okay? That making sense?
Yes.
And then, if you recall, we said that the Gemara said it has to be, if it's on a majority of her body and she's makbid, i.e. she's particular about it, right? And then the sages said, guess what? If it's on the majority of her body, and even if she's not particular about it, it's still going to be a problem. So what does it mean that she's particular about it? When we say particular, who, what are we referring to? So again, there's going to be differences of opinion. And some say that when we talk about particular, we go by the general consensus, i.e. if the average person, okay, is particular about this, then it's considered to be a problem. Of course, you're going to have the opposing opinion that's going to say, no, it doesn't matter what the general consensus is. If she herself is particular about it, that's when it's going to be a problem. The Shulchan Aruch seems to take both into consideration. And the Shulchan Aruch says, well, whether the consensus, the general consensus is particular about it, and or she is particular about it, it's going to create a problem, okay? So now we have two understandings. We understand that when we're talking about the majority, we're talking about here is counted separately and the body is counted separately, okay? And that's going to have implications. And we're talking about she's particular, he makpid, he makpida. It can either go on the individual or, and it can go on the general consensus, okay? Now, what we have to keep in mind is what we said is that why are we concerned about a chatzitza? Because like the pasuk told us that the entire body has to be immersed in water. V'rachatz b'mayim et kol b'saro. The only way the entire body can be immersed in water is if we make sure that no chatzitza is there while she immerses, right? So, for example, would it be a chatzitza if she was wearing a very loose necklace around her neck, okay? So you could argue it's on the minority. First of all, it's on the minority of her body. Second of all, she couldn't care less if it was there. As a matter of fact, she wants it to be there. And most importantly, the water could get under. So it's not anywhere in the category of chatzitza. But the Ramah says that lechatchila, we should be very careful that even if it's loose enough, so that it's not going to qualify as a chatzitza, and we don't care if it's there, and it's on the minority of the body, even so, milechatchila, we should remove it. Which is why that is the practice that we have today, that we try as best as possible to remove everything and anything, I should add, even though technically it doesn't really prevent the water from coming to every single part of her body, okay? Now, when would this factor in? This would factor in a sense, in hindsight, in what we call bidiavad. So that's the words of the Ramah. The Ramah says, lechatchila, from the onset, when we're trying to do things from the highest standard possible, remove everything, even if it's not going to create a chatzitza because either it's a minority and you're not careful, and or it doesn't prevent the water from coming in. The chatzchila, you're going to remove it. In hindsight, if, say, for example, a woman forgot to, okay, or maybe she wasn't able to for whatever reason, yet, and it was something loose that was on a minority of her body, and she doesn't care that it's there, then, in hindsight, it wouldn't disqualify her immersion. So today, when we set out to immerse, we remove certainly those things that are in the majority of our body that were makbid, even if we're not makbid. If it's on a majority of our body, even if we're not makbid, we remove it because that qualifies as a rabbinic chatzitza. Something that's on a minority of our body that we are makbid, that we are particular about, whether I'm particular or others are particular, I remove it because that qualifies a rabbinic chatzitza. Even those things that don't qualify for either of those, and they're not going to prevent water from going to every part of my body, nevertheless, lechatchila, I am going to remove it, okay? So having set down those sort of like principles, I want to try and cover some common misconceptions. And something that I want to emphasize is that if something grows on your body, it is not a chatzitza. It is part of your body. Which, of course, then begs the question, what about hair? What about nails? Okay, so let's talk about that, right? So hair grows on many parts of our body, and it's not considered a chatzitza, like I said, because it's part of our body. However, what is the concern? So this is the concern. The concern with hair is not the hair itself. The concern with hair is that the hair could get tangled, or it could get sticky, okay? Or you could have things attached to it, so to speak. And then that would prevent the water from touching every single part of it. Because remember we said, every single part of her body, and that would include her hair as well. That's a separate conversation in the Gemara, by the way. Has to touch the water. So it's not that the hair itself is creating a chatzitza, but if your hair is knotted, then there are going to be certain strands of hair that did not come in contact with the water. So that's something that we should keep in mind. The other thing that we should keep in mind, and this applies more particularly to hair that grows in other parts of our body, besides for the hair on our head, the hair in our armpits, our pubic hair, etc. What's the story with Matt? It is not a chatzitza, especially from the Ashkenazic perspective. The Sephardim rule more strictly on this, but I'm going to focus here on the Ashkenazic perspective, which is that if it's clean and you've brushed through it or combed through it or whatever, it's not a chatzitza. However, there is a halachic concept that we need to become familiar with, and that's known as kol ha'omed lehikatzetz ki kotzetz dami. Something that you're intending to cut is considered as if it already has been cut. So even though hair that grows on your body, like I said, because it's part of your body, it's not a chatzitza. But if you intend to cut it, then kol ha'omed lehikatzetz ki kotzetz dami, it's considered like it's cut already, then it's no longer a part of your body. So how does this factor in? If generally speaking, a woman is scrupulous about always shaving her legs, no matter the season, no matter the day, no matter what she's wearing, she's always careful about shaving her legs. It's not that the hair itself, so to speak, is problematic, but it is problematic because she plans to cut it. And because she is in the general habit of cutting it, therefore, she should cut it before the mikvah. If, however, she realizes after she's immersed already that she hasn't cut it, then it doesn't disqualify her mikvah, but she should hold off shaving, waxing, lasering, whatever it is, for the next few days. So this way, it's not as if she had intended to cut it. So do you understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So this is an important halachic principle. Right? If you intend to cut it, it's considered as if it's cut. And if it's considered as if it's cut, then it's no longer a part of your body. And then it's considered a chatzitza. So that's why it becomes very individual. People who are super casual and they're never come in contact with any kind of hair removal device, there's no reason. Like I said, if they're Ashkenazic, there's no reason why they suddenly have to become frantic prior to going to mikvah. This is part of their body and it will remain a part of their body. The problem is, if they plan, or if their common, you know, way of doing things is that it's not a part of their body, then that's why it would have to be removed, right?
I also just wanted to add that there are those that rule that once you've created a chazaka, i.e. if a woman is very, like, scrupulous and very particular about removing hair from a certain part of her body prior to immersion, and she creates a chazaka, and then at some point she decides she no longer wants to do that. Like, it just no longer bothers her, or maybe she changed climates and she's just no longer interested in removing hair from that part of her body. Then because she's created a sort of halachic chazaka, she should seek halachic guidance before she stops doing it. Because there's two concerns at that point. First of all, there's the concern that she may possibly need some kind of hatarat nedarim, where she would have to sort of like remove the vow almost. And also there's concern that she has sort of created that this particular here has now become a chatzitza for her, which sort of aligns with some of the principles that we've already mentioned. So just keep that in mind. If there are women out there that have created a chazaka, before they stop doing it, that they should seek halachic guidance.
So again, in regards to here itself is not the problem. Dirty here, tangled here, sticky here, that becomes the problem. And I referenced earlier, like, the idea of dreadlocks. Dreadlocks, you can imagine why that would be a chatzitza. And obviously, somebody who has, for example, those braids, those tightly, like, Ethiopian-style braids, okay? And it's, for whatever reason, there's a tremendous financial loss or cost or whatever in removing it. That is a specific halachic question. Again, like we've said numerous times, this entire podcast series is really for educational purposes. And not for rulings. And this too would certainly be something that a woman in that situation would have to seek halachic guidance for. Okay, so that's in regards to hair. Another common misconception I want to talk about is nails, okay? Now, again, nails are part of our body, right? So what's the problem? The primary concern with nails is the dirt that could be caught under the nail. And if there's dirt caught under the nail, then no water will access that part of the body. So the Rama adds that because of the concern of the dirt under the nail, right, it has become a minhag to cut the nail. And the Rama adds, even if one were to forget one nail, she would be required to re-immerse. Now, again, if that happened to a woman, I'm going to say reach out for halachic guidance before she rushes back to the mikvah. But these are the words of the Rama. Since it became a minhag to cut nails, even if one were to forget one nail, she would be required to re-immerse. Okay? And then, of course, the question is, if we have the minhag to cut our nails, then there's various opinions as to how short she needs to cut them to ensure that no dirt would be found under her nails. Okay? So once it becomes a minhag, and we discussed this in a previous episode, it takes on halachic weight to the point that the Rama is saying over here that she would be required to re-immerse. Okay? Now, the other thing that I want to address when it comes to nails, because I don't think we could have a conversation about nails and immersion in 2022, or is this going to be dropped in 2023? I'm not sure, is gel, okay? And why is it sometimes permitted, and why are some people, passionately opposed to it, etc., okay? So now let's remember and let's apply some of the principles that we spoke about. We spoke about if something is on a majority of your body, and even if you're not particular about it, it's problematic. If something is on a minority of your body, okay, if you are particular, then it's going to be a problem, right? Now, nails, I think we would all agree, are on a minority of our body, okay? If a woman has nail polish, she's clearly not particular that she doesn't want it there. Hafuch, it's called kepei de hafucha. She dafka does want it there. She's particular that she does want it there, okay? But in addition to the fact, right, because remember, we spoke about that the Rama said, l'chatchila, we should still remove it. Even if it doesn't quite qualify as a rabbinic chatzitza, we should still remove it, and that's the custom. In addition, I want to introduce two other concepts, and that is, if something is on your body, but it has no mamashos, meaning like it has no substance, it doesn't even like take up space, so to speak, ebo mamashos, like it doesn't, it's almost not tangible, okay? And it's there lanoi, it's there for beauty's sake, it would not be considered a chatzitza. Now, clearly this is an opinion that is not accepted by all. And then of course there's the argument, do you need both requirements, or is one good enough? If I have it on a minority of my body and it's there for beauty, is that enough to make sure that that isn't considered a chatzitza? Or do I also have to make sure that it doesn't have any kind of mamashos? Like it doesn't have any kind of, how would you say mamashos? Like any kind of substance almost, right?
So is in by mamashos defined? When you say mamashos, is that defined by, like, how big it is? Like, by size? By, like, how would we define mamashos in this case?
Mamashos would actually be, like, let's say hair dye, for example. Why is a woman allowed to immerse with hair dye? Okay? So why is it, because hair dye is really on the majority of the hair. Okay? And so why would she be allowed to immerse with it? So, because there's no mamashes to it. Like there's no, you touch the hair with hair dye, you touch the hair without hair dye, pretty much feels the same. And it's there, lanoi, it's there for beauty's sake. But for example, if a woman, it's been a long time and the woman's hair dye job is growing out and she no longer really likes the way it looks, that raises a question. Is it permissible? Because even though it has no mamashos, it's no longer lanoi. And many women would be makpid on that.
Right.
Okay? So you see how there's a lot of different variances that have to be taken into consideration. And again, I want to keep emphasizing that ideally, lechatchila, and this is really what we strive for, and many women, this is something that throughout their entire lives is the way they do it. They go with the ruling of the Rama. Lechatchila, remove everything. You could find a way how it's not qualified as a chatzitza. All right, that exists. However, that's the bidiyavad, right? But I also think it wouldn't be fair to ignore the bidiyavad because it exists. And for some women, it's necessary. And it's, you know, and again, that's something that if they bumped into that in their own lives, it's something that they would have to seek halachic guidance for to know if they can or they can't. We're just providing this sort of behind the scenes of what would go into the halachic ruling, determining whether it would be okay or would not be okay. Okay? So again, in regarding nails, the nails themselves is not the issue. The issue is the dirt that might get stuck under the nails. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, on the day that she has to immerse in the mikvah, a woman should be careful that she doesn't need dough, etc., etc., because some piece of dough might get stuck there, right? So the Rama says, as a result, the minhag evolved that we just cut the nails. And that has remained the minhag. And that is something that we abide to, okay? And yet, we have to understand that this is layered. And sometimes we have to peel back those layers in order to allow for certain circumstances.
Yeah, I think this is super helpful because okay. I think for women who are in whatever circumstance where they feel necessary to do the bidiyavad, you know, like understanding the principles behind what goes into what's considered a chatzitza or not is just helpful to know, like, oh, this isn't even an option to ask a question. You know, like, I mean, before I heard this from you, like, I wouldn't have even thought that these Absolutely. Things would even be an option. Like, in my head, like, that's completely not allowed. And to know that this is a question I could ask
right.
is helpful.
Right. Exactly. Right. It's like exactly what you said. It's important for us to know what the layers are and what these are built on so we recognize where there is, you know, not a leniency, but an ability to do something that's not particularly the lechatchila. Okay. I also want to just mention, this is something I know that often gets asked about, like a scab, for example, right? So remember, we know that as part of the preparation process, a woman is supposed to soak in a bathtub. And one of the reasons for that is because it softens any scabs. Because, and then if after having soaked in the bathtub, you know, you poke the scab and it doesn't come off yet, it's not a problem. Why is it not a problem? Because it means it's still a part of your body. A scab is a part of your body. But when it's old enough, so to speak, it falls off. So a scab that's kind of getting ready to fall off after soaking in a bathtub, it'll come right off. If you have to really pull at it, then just stop because it's part of your body still. And if you're going to pull it off, it's going to bleed. That's clear indication that it's still a part of your body. A scab will fall off or will be easy to remove when it's no longer a part of your body and protecting the new skin that's growing underneath it, right? So that's what we have to keep in mind. If it's part of your body, it's part of your body, okay? The other thing that I just want to mention is that when it comes to the idea of chatzitza, not all parts of our body are treated equally. What do I mean by that? There are certain parts of our body, for example, inside our mouths or inside our ears, that are known as the beta starim. They're the parts of our body that are sometimes revealed and sometimes not revealed, okay? And there is certain different halachic applications to when something was the beta starim or when something was like on the palm of my hand. And again, a woman should be aware of that because sometimes a question could arise and what applied to one part of her body may not apply to the other part of the body, which is known, like I said, to the beta starim, okay? The other thing that I want to mention when it comes in regards to chatzitza is that if a woman were to find something that she's concerned is a chatzitza after her immersion, certainly she should call her rav. And she also has to remember that sometimes what will factor in is where she's at, meaning if she's still at the mikvah, and it's still possible for her to re-immerse without, you know, any kind of great additional cost of time and aggravation or something like that is one, you know, might factor in. If she's already home and the mikveh is closed and it means she has to wake up the mikveh lady, that also will be taken into consideration. Now, why is there room for consideration? Because exactly what we just spoke about, which principles are we concerned that she possibly violated? Right? So if it was something that was found in the betas starim is one thing. But if it was something that was found on the more exposed parts of her body, that's stricter. And that would render, you know, her having to make a greater effort to have to immerse. If she's already home and she's already been intimate, that also needs to be taken into consideration. Because once a woman has been intimate and you're sending her back to the mikvah, you're basically saying that they were intimate, you know, in a forbidden manner. And that's a very heavy statement, you know, to pass. So that's also something that would be taken into consideration. So what I'm trying to emphasize over here is that chatzitza were not created equal. We have to know that there are differences, there are variances, and there are layers on which they're built, and that we need to really reach out and ask, okay? Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about is that because of this notion of chatzitza, what we have in place are the two steps that are known as chafifa and iyun, right? We want to make sure that the water touches every single part of our body. So we have this obligation, lachfof. Lachfof means to really wash ourselves, okay? Which is generally known as chafifa, the stage of chafifa. And then there's the stage, which is sometimes given less attention, but is actually the d'oraita command, which is known as iyun. And iyun obligates the woman to basically inspect her entire body from top to bottom, to make sure that there is no chatzitza. So the chafifa is the da derabanan to ensure that there's no chatzitza. And the iyun is the da'oraita to ensure that there is no chatzitza. Okay? Now, some people say, some rule, like the Taz, who's a heavy hitter, of course, in the Shulchan Aruch, he rules that a woman can do her iyun at the same time that she's doing during her chafifa. So as she stands in the shower, and as she's cleaning every part of her body, that too is considered like her inspection, okay? However, most rule that even if you were to do your chafifa, and some people do it at home, or some people do it in the mikvah, but still there's like a short wait between they're doing their chafifa and actually coming to the mikvah, you should try to do your iyun as close to the immersion as possible. And that's why sometimes the balanit, the mikvah lady, will assist in that when she asks you those questions as part of, you know, helping you prepare for the mikvah. Did you remember to do this? Did you remember to do that? Do you need me to look at your back to make sure that there's nothing on there? That is part of the iyun process. Now, of course, a woman can do this on her own. And if she's more comfortable, she certainly should do it on her own if that makes her more comfortable. But we have to remember that the balanit is our friend and she's really there to help us ensure that this d'oraita command of iyun is being done, okay? So just to summarize, we have this notion of this pasuk in the Chumash that we have to immerse our entire body. The Gemara goes on to say, from the Torah's perspective, only if it's a majority and she's makbid. The Durabatan come in there and they say, not so fast, my friend. If it's a majority, even if she's not makbid. And if it's a minority, if she is makbid. And even if she's not makbid, it's considered to be a chatzitza. Then we went on to discuss the different ways in which that can apply to different parts of our body. Those that are hidden, those that are revealed, those that are growing. Whether it has mamashos, whether it has noi, etc. When it could have happened that she discovered that she had a chatzitza, etc. And again, in order to ensure that we don't have these chatzitzot, we have the preparatory stage of the chafifa, which can sometimes be done in advance to the immersion, okay? Say a woman lives an hour away from the mikvah and there's no place or no facilities in the mikvah to do her preparation, so she does her chafifa, and she drives to the mikvah. And then when she gets to the mikvah, what's critical at that point is that she does the iyun to ensure that there's no chatzitza, and so that the water can touch every single part of her body. And I want to just make sure that I add over here, this incredible ruling, actually, of the Ramban. The Ramban, Nachmanides, has an entire book dedicated to Hilchot Nida, and at the conclusion of his Halachot and Nida, he has this just incredible ruling, if you will. And maybe we can even include it in the Shona Tadasa because it's so important. But just giving it over, it's short, but just giving it over orally, what he says over here is that in my terms, is just do your best. That's all I ask. Nothing more and nothing less. That's my terms. But really what he says is really along those lines. He's like, if you know what chatzitza is, and you know that you've done the chafifa, and you know that you've done the iyun, then trust yourself that you've done your best. Because once you're going to start questioning, is it this, is it that? He uses the terminology, en ledavar sof. There's no end to it. So know your stuff, do your best, and trust yourself that you've done your best, and that your tefillah is kosher, and that you've offered, your whole heart towards this immersion. All right? And that's in regards to chatzitza. Your thoughts?
Thank you. That was super informative. I mean, there's a lot I learned in this episode that I did not know. Like I said, understanding...
Oh, sort really? Of the, cool.
Yeah. There's lots of... Like, understanding the principles behind, you know, what makes certain different things a chatzitza. Super helpful. Like we said, like, it gives people information about when to, you know, when it's a possibility to ask a question, so that they don't end up cutting corners in other areas that are actually more important halakhically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you so much, Rifki. And I just want to give a heads up. This is our last episode in the series that is focused specifically on halakha, but in our last kind of bonus episode, we're going to be doing, the Hasidic dimension, and we're going to be looking at some of the spiritual significance of the concept of Nida, and sort of seeing it as not just a personal experience, but how our experience of Nida is actually part of a more cosmic global reality. And we're going to be exploring that based on various sources in Kabbalah and Hasidus. So stay tuned for that.